kids, it's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I'm your host, Joe. Joining as usual, Cole. How are you doing?
I'm fine. I'm going to switch it up.
You're just going to say fine and hope that doesn't kill our stream.
Yeah. because this is technically episode 5 1/4 now.
502 and a quarter.
Yeah.
502.25.
Yeah. And, we're just going to hope it doesn't die again.
Yeah, fingers crossed. Yeah, it's been a crazy month for the show, obviously. We just had SML 500, and we are back to the grind. We are back to normal. We are...
Everybody hates us again.
Yes. Business as usual.
And, we're insignificant.
It wouldn't be crazy if we didn't have recording issues, but Vertically right. Impaired is sad he missed 500, but he just subbed earlier, so drop in subs. So thank you, Tony, for your sub. It's okay that you missed 500. You were here in spirit. We all missed you. And there were like 50 other people here, which was insane. I still don't know how that happened.
It was an insane show.
It was. There was Mike and Adam being here.
Chat was active. Codes were flying. Somebody said I sounded like a little boy. It was great.
Did they? I don't remember that.
Yeah. Then they said they were trying to figure out why the little boy was cussing so much.
That's right.
And then they said they figured out it was a lady, and they were trying to figure out why the lady was cussing so much. And the answer to that is because, fuck you, that's why. I can.
I wouldn't expect any other answer, honestly.
Yep, that's just all there is to it. Like, I can say fuck, and I do. Here we are.
So we didn't really get to do this at all for the past month because we've been so busy. Oh, God, No Time for Games just subbed as well. So drop in subs.
Got to get Norg on that.
Yeah, I'm not nearly as good as Norg. But it keeps us busy, so... What have you played in the past month that wasn't for the show? Anything fun that you've been doing, or at least in the past week?
What is this getting to play things that weren't for the show? Like, that never happens. That's
so says all your time with Rocket League and The Division.
Yeah, that's the exception. That's it. I mean, I did play The Division, got some new DLC, and it added 2 new missions and an expedition. And Suda was like, man, I'm really tired, but we got to check this out. That's what Suda sounds like, and you can't tell me otherwise. That's also the lowest my voice can go, so that's that. and so, you know, I'm like, no, we can do this. We'll do it quick. How long could an expedition take? It took us to like 2 a.m., and I don't think he's forgiven me. It's a lot of fun, but took some time.
Yeah.
And then I haven't got to play it again since, so it's fine. It's a good thing we got all the collectibles the first run.
There you go. Oh. Got that out of the way. So that's good, at least.
What have you been doing?
I completed Riverbond. I actually played a game to completion. It was a really fun game. I did it like a month ago when it first came out. It took me like maybe a week or so to do it, but I made it through all the stages. I found all the collectibles. I found all the characters, all the weapons. And it was a really, really fun game. I had a lot of fun with it.
Number 3 has almost completed Riverbond for me.
No, nice.
She loves it, maybe even more than her sister. So it's funny because, like, she's just been playing it naturally. And, like, the achievement progress will pop up whenever my Xbox is idling. And it'll be like, oh, she's got this achievement at, like, 92% and that one at 98%. She's almost there. She's just working her way through it and having a blast doing it.
She'll get there.
Yeah.
Heaven Smiles asking if it's better than 3D Dot Heroes. I never got that far in 3D Dot Heroes. I liked the game, but it didn't really click that well with me. I think it's adorable, and it was fun. It didn't pull me in. So I would say Riverbond is definitely better than 3D Dot Heroes, in my opinion.
Damn.
Yeah.
I'll send Beat Riverbond in a week.
Yeah, it's a fun game. It really is. It was. I even Ashley was playing it. She's having fun with the game. Yeah. And she doesn't play anything anymore.
The kids have just like they go back and forth. If they can't hog both Xboxes to play Minecraft, then they'll converge on one and they'll play Riverbond together. And they like it better because they don't have to split the screen. They're both on the screen, but they still get to see the full screen. Because in their room, they only have a 32-inch.
Mm.
And mom's a bitch and won't let them take over her 55 very often.
Makes sense.
Yeah, and so they've learned the joys, like, when they do get to split up and each take over a different Xbox. They've learned the joys of not split screening, and now they don't ever want to split screen.
Yeah, just the advent of online, I can't go back to split screen. I want my own screen.
Yeah, there's been times where David's like, oh, we could play this together. And I'm like, yeah, but you go in any other room. You get the tiny TV. This one's mine.
Aubrey, my niece, was like, could we play Mario Kart together? And I lied and said, no, we can't because I don't want to play split screen.
You monster.
So I just let her play by herself. So I'm not a huge monster. I still let her play the game. I just don't play with her. Plus, I would just kick her ass. I would. Like, we play Ultimate Chicken Horse all the time when I'm watching her, and she can't do shit to touch me in that game.
Oh, no.
So if we played Mario Kart, I would wreck her world. And I'm an asshole uncle. I don't take it easy on her and, like, let her win. It's like, you gotta accept your losses, and you gotta learn with losing to video games.
There's benefit in that, though. Like, to an extent, you don't want to smash her all the time.
Yeah,
but there's benefits to letting them lose every now and then.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, as I think that's one of the reasons that number three likes games like Super Meat Boy and the Spelunky. Like, winning wasn't a guarantee.
Yeah,
she wasn't just gonna roll in there and get out and get it all. She was gonna have to think about it and work at it, and she knew that, you know, she was gonna die. You gotta
earn that shit.
Yeah, and so she was prouder. Like, she likes Riverbond, but she straight up said, "Oh, it's too easy."
It is too easy, and that's why because I liked
she,
it.
Yeah, but she will tell you, like, this is too easy, you know, because she's baby savage, and she might not be a baby anymore, but that shit don't change. Leopards don't change their spots, guys.
Yeah.
She's harsh about it, but even 6-year-olds enjoy games sometimes where they don't have to put in the work.
Mm-hmm. So. Hey, I'm 38 and I want the games where I don't have to put in the work. Like, give me all the Rattlake games.
I am not mad.
And they've had some good games lately too. Like that Super Wylo D-make that we're going to be reviewing soon. That one is really fun.
Hoggy 2 was really good. I haven't good. Been getting the Rattalica game. Somebody's robbing me of this shit, and I'm not happy about it. I need some. I'm trying to hit 275,000. I need some help here.
All right, next Rattalica game we get is all yours.
Put them in my veins.
I will. I will inject it inside you. That was gross.
That was gross. Don't do that again. Cut that one out.
You started it. Anyway, we should probably talk news. There was a lot of news this past week, which is good because we needed something to talk about. But Games right. with Gold were announced.
Mm-hmm.
Really, really, really solid lineup for Games with Gold.
Mm-hmm. People are still pissed about it.
People, they could give away Gears 5, Mortal Kombat 11.
They are giving away Gears 5. People pissed about it.
No, they're giving away Gears 4.
No, but they are on, like, Game Pass, and people are pissed about it.
Oh, yeah, it's on Game Pass on day one.
Which is basically giving it away. It's the Ultimate Edition, too. But people are pissed about that, too.
Well, Ultimate Edition's only for Game Pass Ultimate.
Like, who wouldn't have Game Pass Ultimate?
There's some people who didn't upgrade. I don't know why.
Dumbasses.
Because it's basically a free upgrade, but, you know, teach their own. on Xbox One for the entire month of August, we're getting Gears of War 4. Mm-hmm. And then August 16th through September 15th is Forza Motorsport 6, which means it's probably getting delisted soon.
That tends to be the way it goes with Forza Motorsport games.
Yeah, they
Forza
give it games away last minute.
Yeah, they're just like, well, we're losing the license. You get Forza, you get Forza, everybody get Forza. So, you know.
Yeah. Oh, Great Quantum saying it wasn't a free upgrade. It was a dollar. I'm wrong.
But you got an extra month for that dollar on top of what you already had.
Yeah. So you got a month. You paid for the month. The upgrade was free.
Yeah.
You paid for that extra month. But Xbox 360, August 1st through the 15th is getting Torchlight. And then the 16th through the 31st, Castlevania Lords of Shadow.
Does that mean that have all the Castlevania games been added, games with gold at this point?
I don't, was Harmony of, or no, what was the, was it Harmony of Dissonance, the multiplayer one?
I'm not sure. I'll tell you though, I've got a whole slew of Castlevania games on my hard drive that I know I ain't never played. I should though, because I did play Bloodstained and I liked it, so I should go back. I ain't got time for that, but
you should play
there.
Symphony of the Night.
I should play a lot of shit, Joe.
You should. But yeah, overall, really, really good month for games with gold.
Yeah, I'm not upset about it. You know the funny thing about Gears of War? You remember, like, they did the great big launch party event on, I can't remember if Mixer, it might have still been Beam at the time.
Oh, God.
But they did that big launch party where they streamed it, and, like, throughout the whole show, like 500 codes for the game were gradually put up on the screen or shown in different areas. Mm-hmm. And like you just had to type it in stupid ass fast. Yeah, I got the Ultimate Edition that way.
Nice.
When they did that. And I played it one time. I played the Horde mode and then I never touched it again. I was like, yeah, that's my experience with Gears of War.
Oh, Lord. One of these days we'll have to organize a party and go through all the games.
Because I have them. They're all just sitting there.
They need to be played.
Yeah, it's a little depressing. Think of all the achievements I'm missing out on. But, you know, when I first tried Gears of War 1 back on the 360, and at the time, like, I was moderately decent at Halo. I managed it. But I just wasn't good at shooters yet. And if the ones that I had played, I was better at first person and not third.
Mm-hmm.
Like, now I'm a beast at third person. So if I went back, I'd probably be fine. But the first time I tried to play it, I played Gears of War 1. I died in the tutorial. And I was like, yeah, I'm not good at this. And I never touched it again.
Hey, if it didn't click for you, it didn't click for you.
You know,
just got to try again.
You know what gets me, though, is that holding A to run, but you could just rebind the controls now.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't even be an issue anymore.
Thank you, Elite Controller.
Oh, my Elite's so good.
Paddles in the back. Gotta love them. But PlayStation Plus, I guess they saw the news for Games with Gold and were like, oh, we got to step our shit up because PlayStation Plus is really good, too.
Really?
Yeah. Sniper Elite 4.
Ooh.
And Wipeout Omega Collection.
Okay.
I'm thrilled for Wipeout. I've wanted to pick that up. Everyone's saying playing that game in VR is just mind-blowing, so I can't wait to get incredibly sick trying that out.
Are you going to stream it?
I don't know. Maybe.
Stream it. Stream it.
What's up, everyone? I'm going to play.
Perfect.
Stream lasts 34 seconds.
That's how we're going to tip over the 1,000 follower mark.
Hey, we're getting there. We're at like 998, something crazy.
Yeah.
I don't know what the fuck is happening. Oh, yeah. I do the Gleam giveaway that we're doing.
Oh.
I think you have to follow me on Gleam to enter the giveaway. But
so that Gleam, means after just hosted the giveaway, us. After the giveaway, we're going to drop back down to like 995.
Probably. People will be like, well, fuck this guy. I wonder how many people from last week just like casually are hanging out in chat right now, just giving us another shot to see what the show is like. They're like, oh my God, this is terrible.
Probably none because we're still sitting on our usual non-viewer. So it's like the non-people who are always here. We're sorry, guys.
Hey, I'll take it. They are loyal, and I love them for it.
It's our usual crew of
misfits and hooligans.
Yeah, I was going to say suspects, but...
our wet pancakes.
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus. But it wasn't just Games with Gold and PlayStation Plus. Game Pass got some additions as well. August 1st, so just this week, we got Downwell on PC, which was updated with Xbox achievements, which is pretty cool.
Nice.
And then Pandemic the Board Game on console and Ashes Cricket on console.
Did Pandemic get achievements too?
Well, it's on console, so yes.
Oh, it's on console.
Yeah.
Oh, it's on console.
Yeah, just released.
I wanted to play it. I was thinking it was on PC, which, I mean, I could play it still, but mm-hmm. I didn't know if it had achievements or not. And, well, what's the point of playing if it ain't got achievements?
Oh, boy. August 8th, we're going to see Space Hulk Tactics join the PC Game Pass and Jackbox Party Pack 2 join the console lineup. And then on August 14th, we're going to get Slay the Spire debuting on Xbox One on Game Pass.
Nice. I feel like I should know what this game is, and I don't.
A pretty popular card combat game.
Oh, okay.
Purnell really liked it, so.
Purnell really likes a lot of things, so.
He does. He's a happy guy.
Yeah.
No Time for Games dropping 200 biddies in chat.
Dropping bits!
Thank you, Norg. Thank you. It started quicker than I expected, so I was going to say, Norg, take it away and expect it to go. I'm like, Norg, dropping bits!
I wondered what had happened, because like, I thought, oh, fuck, Scott's breaking up on us again. This episode is doomed.
No, Norg just came in quicker than I anticipated. But thank you, Norg, and thank you, No Time. Always a pleasure seeing biddies drop into our cup on screen.
Yes.
Especially after a sub comes and, like, sprays everything everywhere. Those are fun to watch.
Yeah. It's so cute, though, because, like, you see the little sub kitties in the cup. That's the best part.
And then they just crash and everything goes flying.
Yeah. Sub kitties are best kitties.
You want to know what's bad, though? Did you hear the news at GameStop?
No.
They laid off over 50 members of management nationwide. And I don't mean like store managers. I'm talking district and regional managers.
Yikes.
They're apparently realigning their districts and shuffling things around. Friends of mine who work at GameStop are obviously concerned that this might lead to stores closing.
That seems pretty much to be expected.
Yeah, I mean, I know a lot of areas that have a mall and a Walmart really close to each other, and the mall has a GameStop and the Walmart has a GameStop in the plaza. So I could see a lot of cases like that where they shut one of them down.
Yeah. Walmarts have GameStops in them?
Not in them, but like in the plaza.
Oh.
Yeah.
Our Walmart is not in a plaza.
Root Beer Is My Jam just subbed, so drop in subs. That's three tonight.
Kitties!
A lot of kitties dropping tonight. Love the kitties.
So much pussy.
By the way, thank you for the kitty sub badges. They are adorable.
Yeah, that's what I do.
They are so cute.
I was so worried because they're tiny, but they're fat, and I was like, I might not be able to tell they're even kitties at this point. Because sub badges, like, they lie to you. They go, oh, yeah, you got to make them in three sizes. And, like, the biggest size is 72 pixels, which is already fucking small.
Yeah.
But then the smallest one is 18 pixels.
So you got to fit a picture into 18 pixels.
Nothing looks good in 18 pixels, okay?
Well, the cats look good, so.
It's so scary to make. And I used to, it made, when they made sub badges so that, like, affiliates could have them and people started asking me to do them for them. Like, it made me appreciate making emotes more because I used to bitch about the smallest size of emotes being 28 pixels. Everything looks like garbage at this size. Yeah, no. 28 is like a giant canvas now. I don't know what do I put in all this space? It's quite a challenge.
But they look good at least, so that's what matters.
Yeah, they look lovely.
And Coltrane is being incredibly annoying tonight. She's been meowing at me for the past 20 minutes, like, pat me, pay attention to me. So So I'm like trying to keep her shut up and petting her. Some sales figures news. The PS4 has officially shipped 100 million units.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is quite a lot of units.
That is a lot of units. I still don't know why. I don't know why the PS4 is as popular as it is. It's a good system, but it has a lot of drawbacks, and the design and how badly it overheats blows my mind that it's this popular, but whatever. As long as people are happy.
David's nephews are adamant PS4 fans. And I just, every time they get to talking about it, I just sit there with my nose wrinkled up and like my eyes all squinty. And I'm like, but why? Because I really,
fucking kids.
I don't understand. Why do you want this? And the only thing I can understand is like weebiness. And that's, and I mean, there's weeb shit on Xbox. There's some of the stuff that we've played on Xbox. And I'm just like, yep, that's certified weeb. So I don't understand exclusive. I see everybody says that, but I don't know. I'm sure God of War is fine. Now Horizon Zero Dawn I would actually play. Spider-Man I couldn't give a shit about. I don't know if anybody has become aware of this about me, but I'm not big into like superhero shit.
No.
So it's just like everybody's like, oh my God, Spider-Man, and I'm like, it's a euphemism. For dick slime. It's all that web stuff is. It's a euphemism for dick slime.
Oh, Jesus. Anyway.
I'm wrong. No, you tell me I'm wrong.
Did you hear about the Doom re-release?
Exactly. Fucking.
Yeah, Doom 2 and Doom 3 all got surprise re-releases last week on Xbox One, Switch, PS4, and Steam. The games are priced at $5 each for Doom and Doom 2, and then Doom 3 is $10, so $20 for three games, not that bad.
No, not bad at all.
Apparently, the ports aren't the greatest. They removed all of the online play from them, which is really fucking stupid.
Was there actually online play on them?
On the 360 version.
Really? Because yeah. There was this dude... Shiz streamed Doom, and there was a dude in chat, and like I think I even got fed up and banned him because he was being he was like, how do I invite a friend? And I'm like, it's fucking Doom, there's no online, get the fuck out of here.
I mean, there was like deathmatch in the 360 version. There wasn't co-op.
I didn't know. Sorry.
But yeah, the new ones don't have any online at all. Also, the music is slowed down for some reason.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Weird.
Yeah, I was watching a stream. I forget who was playing it, but someone posted a link of the song from the PC version, and it was noticeably quicker in the PC version. So the music, for some reason, is slowed down on these new releases. Apparently, it's something with, like their MIDI versions of the songs that are being converted, and that's what's slowing them down. I don't know.
Wow, that is so odd.
Yeah. I don't know. Whatever.
And the devs haven't said anything about it or just...
No, nothing's been addressed.
You'd think they'd at least give an excuse.
Who knows?
Maybe even if it was like, oh, we just goofed on the port and slowed it down a little bit. We're sorry. We'll fix it.
Or maybe they're hoping that if they ignore it, it goes away.
That is totally a viable option. Check out Telltale.
Oh, man. Last bit of news I have is that Obsidian announced that they're going to be bringing The Outer Worlds to the Switch of all platforms.
Really?
Yeah. I didn't expect a game that big to make it to the Switch, but that's pretty cool that they're working on it.
I wonder how well it'll play, because let's be honest. The Switch is not technically inclined.
True.
So... Like, I've heard some rumblings that the Outer Wilds needed polish as it was.
Outer Worlds.
Worlds. I do that every time. I fuck them up every time. I know they're different, and I know that, like, looking at them, the differences, and I still fuck it up. But I've heard that there's some rumblings that, like, it needs some polish and is a little chunky as it is.
Hmm.
And if it's already like running kind of chunky on Xboxes, is it gonna run really chunky on a Switch?
I don't know. Or we'll find
will
out.
They, you know, be able to buff all that out? Like, or will there be a risk of maybe not exactly having parity, and it will have some obvious downgrades?
My question here is, who is responsible for bringing it to the Switch? Part of me wonders if this was a Microsoft decision.
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised. Microsoft has no problem spreading their games around.
Yeah. Microsoft is having fun
Minecraft,
releasing their shit everywhere.
Rub some Minecraft all up in your face, and it doesn't matter where you're at. And that's worked very well for them. I can't imagine why they wouldn't just be like that with everything at this point.
Yeah.
You know, exclusivity is bad for gamers. You want to play this shit on a Switch? Take your happy ass to your Switch. As long as you're giving us your money, we don't care.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
But yeah, I wonder if this was in the works before the acquisition, or because you know the acquisition had to start months and months and months before it was ever announced.
Absolutely.
So like the discussions there, you have to wonder if this version of the Outer Worlds was already being planned then, or if Microsoft came in, bought them, and were like, hey, are you guys working on a Switch port? Why not look into a Switch port of the game?
Right. Or at the very least, they were like, don't stop working on a Switch port.
Yeah. Especially after they were the ones responsible for getting Cuphead on the Switch.
Yeah. So, I mean, it wouldn't surprise me that Xbox is just playing the, we don't care where you play our shit as long as you're playing our shit.
Yeah. Root Beer's my jam saying Switch will probably catch up with Xbox hardware sales by the end of the year. The Switch is apparently already over 37 million systems sold.
Yeah.
37. I think it's going to blow the PS4 out of the water.
I saw where the Switch Lite, the turquoise blue, is the most popular pre-order color.
I'm not shocked at all. That turquoise blue is sexy as hell.
Number 3 wants the yellow, oddly enough, but number 2 wants a blue one. Oh no! Burger Thing says that they're having
stream keeps freezing. I don't know. I don't have any dropped frames on my end, so it might just be Twitch being shitty.
Yeah. So everything's okay over here.
Yeah. Things are smooth on my end for once, thankfully. But yeah, that's the news I have. Anything you want to talk about for the week?
No, I already brought up the Switch thing. I segued it in there like a fucking ninja.
You're a pro.
Oh, speaking of ninja. That's the thing people are mad at.
Oh, yeah. So how about that? Mixer signed popular Twitch streamer Ninja to an exclusivity deal. So Ninja is taking his talents over to Mixer.
Literally like 2 minutes after they announced it, he was already unverified on Twitch. It's funny.
That's petty.
But it's funny.
Yeah, that's petty as shit, but I love it.
So I am tickled by the center of it. Also, you can get a free sub to Ninja on Mixer currently.
Interesting.
I was a little disappointed. I was hoping that like they send you a sub code, and then I could just sub to whoever the fuck I wanted. But apparently, that's not the case.
No, you have to sub to him.
I'm not inclined to sub to Ninja because he said some really shitty stuff about not streaming with female streamers. And so then, like, one of the best things I saw was actually from an Xbox employee who was like, hopefully we paid him enough that he can stream with women now. It was so good.
Oh, man. I miss that controversy, so I...
Oh, it's stupid, too, because, I mean, what he said is bullshit, because his whole premise was, I won't have female gamers on my stream because I don't want people to start rumors that I'm having an affair with them.
Okay.
Like, can you imagine how fucking stupid it would be if either of our spouses were like, you guys can't do the show this week. People will think you're having an affair. That's never going to fucking happen.
No.
And
especially because of how the distance, like there's no weekend hookups when you're in Kentucky and I'm in Pennsylvania.
Never mind that we just tell each other to shut the fuck up all the time.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's our entire friendship.
Our friendship is cursing at each other and talking about video games.
And I'm like, that's not a thing that happens. The whole problem with that from a female perspective, if you don't mind my tangent, is that when a guy says something like that, especially somebody who's in a position that Ninja is in to be influential over younger gamers. Yeah, Root Beer is my jam says he's Mike Pence level of whipped. And it's true because it's like, but the problem is and it's the same thing with Mike Pence doing it. Not to get into politics, but it's the same concept. It objectifies women and implies that women are only there to be potential relationship interests, romantic interests. And that if you're bringing another woman into your circle of friends, the only option to go is romance. And that's bullshit. Everybody knows that my husband and I have been together for 18 years. Literally everybody I'm friends with is a dude save two people. I love y'all, but I ain't fucking none of y'all. But as problematic as it is from a female point of view, it also is just a bad perspective to push down on younger men. Because then they think, oh, well, people think I can't control myself around women, then maybe I can. Everything I do around women, it has to be sexualized. You know, that's how you get that mentality of like, well, I killed her because she wouldn't go on a date with me even after she smiled at me and told me I was a nice guy.
No, God. You know, nice guys.
Like that's where that mentality starts. And that's not a good thing for somebody in the position with as many followers and as influential as he is. That's not a good ideology to put out there.
No.
So that's my problem. That was the drama. That was most people's problem with it. Of course, there were the dumbasses who had things to say. They always do.
Yeah. Dumbasses are everywhere.
But, you know, it's just a case of we're more than just romantic interests and we deserve to inhabit the same spaces in the gaming sphere without being deduced down to we have boobs.
Yes, that is correct.
Next. Next up.
Next topic. You ready for reviews?
Are we? See, look how sexy that was.
Yeah, that's hot. That's so fucking hot. Yeah. Yes. Baby.
Are we already up to reviews?
Yes.
Fuck, let's do this. Where's my notes?
First game to talk about tonight is called Church in the Darkness, developed by Paranoid Productions, published by Fellow Traveler, released August 2nd on Xbox One, Switch, PC, and PS4 for $19.99. The year is 1977. Your nephew has joined a religious cult and moved with them to the South American jungle to found Freedom Town. It's up to you to sneak into the commune, find out what's really going on, and decide if you need to get your nephew out. Cole, tell us about Church in the Darkness.
I have been waiting for this game and following these devs on Twitter for years. Years. And when you have that much hype built up for a little indie game, you're in dangerous territory. There's a lot of room for shit to go wrong.
And if your expectations are super high, that's even more problematic.
The good news is that I was not let down by the Church in the Darkness.
Yay.
I don't know exactly what I was expecting gameplay-wise. I knew the premise. I'd seen all the screenshots. But how it actually played out was still a bit of a mystery to me. And I do shit like that on purpose because I like for there to be at least some kind of surprise when I go into a game.
Yeah.
So for the Church in the Darkness, as you said in the summary, your nephew has joined a cult. And the cult has picked up and moved off. And it's basically up to you to infiltrate that cult. And where you go from there as far as saving your nephew Alex is really up to you. There are so many different ways that this game can play out. every time you start the story, you are inserted somewhere around Freedom Town's camp. It will pick a random insertion point. There are several for it to choose from. And you must then sneak into the camp. So the gameplay uses a top-down stealth mechanic. I think I was kind of surprised because it reminded me a lot of American Fugitive with that top-down mechanic and the way that you navigated and tried to stay stealthy. There are, like I said, there's so many different ways to approach it that even though stealth is kind of your preferred, the game's preferred way for you to go into it, you could find guns and go in blazing if you wanted to. You're probably not going to last long, but that's okay. That's one of the possible endings anyway. And when I say one of the possible endings in so many ways for it to play out, I think the number was somewhere around 20 or 25 potential endings.
Holy shit.
Because every time you play, regardless of whether or not you do get Alex out or whether or not you interact with the preachers or other citizens of the commune, those things all affect the story your first time running through, but also affects how you play your future runs, because you can choose to go back into the commune with everybody having the same personality traits as they did on your previous run, or you can choose for it to randomize and give them different traits. So they may be more or less receptive to you. You might get caught on one run and they kill you immediately, whereas you might get caught on another run and they might just put you in a cage that you can break out of and you have three or four chances to keep trying to get Alex out.
That's really cool.
It's just luck of the draw, and you don't know when you're going into it how they're going to react to you unless you've purposely played the run before and know that that's how it's going to pan out so that you can do something different to try to get a different run. For example, I had a run where I found Alex and he was absolutely content. He was like, no, everything's great here. Why would I want to leave? And I left without him. I just walked out of the commune and went home. And that's one of the potential endings. But then I had another run where he's like, you know, shit's going bad. There's things I don't understand. And he tells me to go and talk to the two cult leaders. And when I went to one of them, rather than just approaching them and talking to them, I just on a whim tricked the guard into shooting the cult leader.
Oh, God.
And then I left with Alex and I got a completely different series of events. And even that was different still from my next playthrough where I went through and talked to different characters. There are some characters, some potential storylines that are locked away until you've completed other ones. So not everything is available to you, and that keeps you coming back because once you do come to an ending, it'll say, oh, well, now you can have interactions with this character. What? How does that change the way you approach it?
So it's like a roguelike.
Yes. Yes and no, because getting caught isn't always death. But when you reach the end of your story, whether you die or whether you leave with Alex, or whether you leave without Alex, or whether you do or you don't kill the preachers, or whether you do or you don't help the other members of the commune, all those things can be reset and done differently every time, like a roguelike. So it just keeps everything fresh. Like, no matter how much you think you know how Freedom Town is going to play out once you get there, like, you could go into it, you could start the game, you're like, I'm going to talk to this character, I'm going to talk to that character, I'm going to help this one out, I'm not going to help that one, I'm not going to go to this building, I'm going to go to that building. It does not matter once you're fucking in there. Because everything just randomizes and changes, and the story builds around you as you play it.
That's really cool.
So that's all the good stuff.
I was going to say, it's all good so far. Do you have any negatives?
I did have one major problem, and that was in some instances, I would get caught a few times, and the guards would be on alert more. And whenever the guards were more alert, or there were more guards around, like if I was trying to get to one of the preachers, for example, or get to Alex, and he was heavily guarded, the game would start to like stutter and have micro freezes. Not anything game breaking that you couldn't play it, but it would be noticeable, especially since your character already moves kind of slow to start with. And then you have that framiness kind of juddering you along, and you're just like, yeah, we're kind of moving at a snail's pace here. But it wasn't to the point where I was like, I can't play this. But it does need a little bit more optimization and some smoothing out.
Yeah.
That was literally the only thing I could complain about with this game.
Yeah, sounds like you really enjoyed it.
I had a blast. I thought it was so creative, just all the different situations that you could find yourself in. You have such a bare bones plot, and you think, well, it's a cult. How many different ways could it fucking go? And then the game's like, this many? And then you're like, well, shit, this is my life now. Because you want to know, you know, did I infiltrate? Some of the best aspects of it is how it tells you how your actions and behaviors affected the commune. Like when you get to the end, it'll say, oh, well, X number of people died, and so the community believed that blamed the U.S. governments for sending spies to them. Or, you know, and it's just like, but it was just me. I was just one person dicking around. I'm sorry I cut too many of your alarm boxes. You know? And it was really creative to watch just the way the story changes. Like, oh, you cut alarm boxes? Well, now they think the spies are after them. You know?
Yeah.
And it's just such a creative way to milk the story along and just turn it from you're a person in a jungle to shit just got crazy really quickly. I want to tell one of the stories, but I'm afraid it's spoilery. I mean, everything about the game is spoilery if you're not familiar with with all the potential that it could go. But I would say
save the story, hold it for next week. You could tell it. That'll give people a chance to play.
Okay. That's a good idea because, it's a good story. It needs to be told.
Yeah, you could talk about that next week on the show. But for now, $20 on Church in the Darkness. What do you think? Do I even need to ask?
I don't think you do. This is a fucking buy it. And this is literally where my whole weekend is going. I've got to uncover all these different stories. I didn't get enough.
Next game to talk about is called Meow Motors, developed and published by Art Vostok, released August 2nd on Xbox One for $14.99. You will take to the track and play as one of a dozen colorful cats memorable for their different characteristics and unique personalities. Overcome various difficulties of the tracks drifting through mines and bombs. Stop and slow down your competitors by blasting them with bubblegum and other astonishing weapons. Cole, tell us about Meow Motors.
Joe, do you like cats?
I fucking love this game. I'm just going to say it. We've been sitting on this one for almost a month now that we've been previewing it before we're able to review it. And I'm so happy that we're finally able to talk about this game.
Is this your pick of the week?
Yeah. Yeah. Because I've played a bunch of the games this week for once. And I am in love with Meow Motors. I've been loving this game.
Okay, so Meow Motors is basically cats, cars, and occasionally a shark, since it is Shark Week, right? So there's occasionally sharks.
Yes.
And a lot of racing. There's, I think, 18 tracks?
There's a bunch, I know that.
Yeah, there's about 18 tracks. And they range from all kinds of different themes. from medieval raceways to like little medieval towns to there was a pirate ship in one. There
like
was
like a jungle a theme.
Snowy one. There's a Halloween one. If you can think of it, there's a track for it. Yeah. It's really impressive. The downside is that you will race the different race variants on each track, but they don't really change up the track. Like, you don't ever go backward on the track or anything. That would be kind of neat. Like, you go one way.
Yeah,
like
a mirror mode or something.
Or, yeah. If you could just switch it up a little, but you always have the same starting point, same end point. The shortcuts are always in the same places. Again, that's probably just too much to ask for. Given everything else, it's a little forgivable. At least there are enough variety of maps that it's not the end all be all. Like, if there were 6 maps, I'd be a little more disappointed in the lack of something else, but there's plenty enough. There are a variety of different cars, although there's not anything that changes up with the cars. They're just cosmetic. But there are different cats that you can play as too. And they actually do have,
Different abilities
thrown into them. So like one will give you a little extra energy for jumping. And for the, lost my train of thought. What's it called? For the energy for the drifts and stuff. Extra boost. Words. Yes. Get it out. It was just right there on the tip of my tongue. And I'm like, for fuck's sakes, get this word out. Couldn't do it.
Proud of you.
Oh, it's that day. It's impressive. Just how many different options there are and ways to change it up. There are different power-ups in the levels. The power-ups are kind of, they exist. I don't think they make too much of a difference in regular like racing mode, because usually if you've gotten out ahead enough, then you're so far ahead it doesn't matter. Yeah. And most of the power-ups don't affect anybody if they're not in front of you. So they're just kind of a thing at that point. You do have the ability to like spill some oil behind you to like slow people down. So that helps. You're not completely out in the cold when you're out front. However, your oil meter and your boost meter are the same,
yeah.
So they share. And so if you use a little bit of oil, then you don't have as much boost. So use it wisely. Don't sit there and just like slick all the oil out for no good reason. Unless you're using the character that like makes it so you don't waste your oil. So you get more oil to dump with the bar, and so you can kind of like space out and be a little strategic for a kart racer, honestly. But if you know, like if you're in a position where there's just too many people too close to your butt and you're playing as the one character where you get a little more oil, it's worth it.
You're just finding more ways to say oil, aren't oil. You? Yeah, oil.
I keep forgetting I say it funny until people point it out to me. I think everybody says "ol" because that's what I hear in my head.
You're just finding ways to say it more.
Like, everybody's like, "It's oil, dumbass," and I'm like, "Says you."
Oh shit!
But yeah. Anyway, racing variations include, you've got your normal races, obviously, where you just want to be first, and then there's drift trials, and then there's like the demolition, almost kind of like a demolition derby. That's where the power ups are at their best, though.
Yeah,
is where you're just trying to like take out as many people as you can. It's not an elimination style race, though. So you don't take them out and then they're gone and you just win by being the last man standing. You get more stars for the more people that you knock out, and they respawn and you get to knock them out again and again.
Yeah, and they circle around. So if you get too far ahead of people, they'll be in front of you.
They rubber band back really easily, which is for the better. Like, because you can really easily get ahead of everybody else, especially if you're playing on the easier difficulties. Which, if you're going for the achievements, why wouldn't you?
True.
But the interesting thing is that even on the higher difficulties, I didn't think it was. I played it on more than one of them just to try it out, so I knew what I'd be talking about. But I didn't think, like, they didn't have an unfair advantage over you, which is rare for kart racers, because usually a kart racer, once you put it on the highest difficulty, you're just like, fuck this.
Yeah.
Everything goes from normal to unfair real quick.
Especially in Mario Kart.
Yeah. And I didn't have that problem with Meow Motors. It felt perfectly balanced. Like, I was still able to get out in front of everybody, and I might not have left them quite as badly in the dust, but they weren't like completely rubber banding in front of me for no good reason either.
Which is good.
Yes.
I do wish the game had more modes. It's pretty much all the championships are just the same three modes repeated, which they're fun. I do wish there were a couple more, though. I'm not sure what else they could have put in there, because they kind of take care of the race, the drift, and the destroy everyone. I guess time trials, but I fucking hate time trials, so I'm glad those aren't there.
Yeah, I was really glad there wasn't any kind of time trial. I just don't enjoy them.
Yeah. So I guess the shortness of modes isn't that bad when you consider one of them could have been time trials.
that was my other thing too. Like, I don't know how to complain about this because I'm not actually complaining, but yeah, it could have had time trials. Yeah. So I'm really glad it doesn't. But it would have been nice if there had been a little more shakeup. And again, maybe that's where some mirror races or something could have come in too, but at the same time, it's like, don't add more shit if you're going to add time trials.
Yeah.
We're good. We're good where it's at.
Well, overall, $15 on this one. What do you think of it?
I give it a buy it. I think of the kart racers that I've reviewed in the last little while, and there's been a few, but of them all, this one has definitely been one of the strongest ones.
Yeah, it controls really well. It looks really well. It plays really well. It's just a really, really solid game, and there's cats in it.
Yeah.
So why wouldn't you want to buy this game? I think the handling is the most important thing. Like, they nailed the handling in this game. There was never a race where I'm like, oh, the bullshit handling, I couldn't make the turn, or the game felt right. So massive props for getting the controls right in a kart racer.
I hate drifting, and I was still able to do it. And I was
I'll never get some of the drift achievements, like get a chain of 10 or whatever it is, but
I think the highest I got was like 6 or 7.
Yeah. They want a 10. Go to hell.
Yeah.
Next game to talk about is called Solo Islands of the Heart, developed by Team Gotham, published by Merge Games. It released July 30th on PS4, 31st on Xbox One, August 1st on the Switch for $19.99. Solo is an introspective puzzler set on a gorgeous and surreal archipelago. Reflect on your loving relationship by exploring contemplative, dreamlike islands. Cole, tell us about Solo.
Solo is, I'm going to go ahead and get this out of the way. This game is not for everybody.
No.
It is very narrative heavy, but the narrative relies on you being introspective and telling your own story. It is a puzzle game, and you will be faced with some minor obstacles, but the bulk of the game is that it's a story about love and connection, and sometimes even loss. And, that can make it kind of a hard sell, especially at the price point. Like, do you really want to sit and answer questions about your love life while you move some boxes around? Here's a game for you. I'm not saying it's bad in any regards, but it's definitely different.
See, I thought for sure this would be a game that like clicked with you and you would absolutely love it.
I did love it. But again, I realize not everybody's going to. Yeah. This is one of those, it's quirky and it's charming and I'm into it, but maybe not everybody else.
Yeah, if you're looking for action, this isn't the place to find it.
No. So when you first start this game, you choose your character, you choose your gender. You can be male, female, or non-binary, which I thought was incredible. That is not something you see often.
Mm-hmm.
And then you choose your love interest gender, and you can choose male, you can choose female, you can choose non-binary, and you can also just choose any, which is again, not something we see often. I was very impressed at the openness at the beginning of the game. It's just like, hey, I don't care who you want to love, just tell us who they are, you know? That's great. As you progress through the narrative, you are going to interact with these totem poles, and they're going to ask you questions. All the answers are multiple choice, and in some respects, that's not a negative. In others, it can be a little limiting.
In what ways?
Because the questions will be like, do you think that it's possible to love more than one person at once? And then your options are like, yeah, it's fine, love whoever. Or no, it's not okay. Or yeah, it's fine, but not for me. And it's like, okay, but what if there were other options that I wanted to answer? Yeah. You know? So then there are times where, you know, the answers seem a little
black and white instead of shades of grayish.
And it's surprising given how like so many other questions that go into the game have those shades of gray covered. But then you cut to the actual like questions from the totem pole, which are pushing the narrative, and you're just like, that was an odd time to cut shit down. It's easy to just be like, well, that doesn't really matter much in the grand scheme of things, because you're just being introspective of yourself, and it's good for you to ask yourself these questions even if you can't answer it fully. But this also affects like how the game builds the story. There is no right or wrong answers to any of the questions. They don't like change the ending or anything like that, but it changes like how you interact with the representation of your love interest. And sometimes I was a little put off by what the characters would say with regard to how I had answered. They just seemed to kind of clash with each other. One of the biggest ones specifically was like, was a question about monogamy. And, you know, do you believe him, that you can be with one person forever? Or do you think love is fleeting or things like this? And I remember choosing, yeah, you can be with one person forever. Shit, I don't know. I've been married for 18 years. We're doing fine. but then, like, the little ghost character that represents your significant other is like, oh, but can you really be together forever? And I'm like, that's not what I wanted to have happen when I answered that. That is not doing any favors for me. This was entrapment. This is a jilted lover. What is this? So it was just one of those odd moments that stuck out to me and kind of bugged me. But I mean, in the end, it's really all just about, you know, looking into your own perception and questioning your own thoughts and about love and relationships. So it's still interesting, even though it can be a little off-putting at times. The puzzles, they start off really simple, like just touch a light pole and it's a lighthouse and it shines a light at a totem. That's basically your goal. It's just to get to and touch the lighthouse, and then to get to and talk to the totem every puzzle.
Doc Havoc sounds like a Telltale game where every choice you make is wrong and you always get crucified for it.
It's pretty close to that. Like they were taking lessons, because it's not technically wrong, but the answer, like sometimes the way the game would perceive your answer was very different from how you perceived the potential for it to go.
Yeah.
It's like, of course, love forever, yay! And the game's like, what is it really though? You're like, no, you jilted motherfucker. It's not. Get out of here. the puzzles, they do start to get a little more creative. You'll start having to move boxes around to build platforms and so on and so forth. But it's not anything that, like, you can't wrap your head around. It's meant to be a relaxing, contemplative experience. You can actually complete the whole game in about 2 to 3 hours if you want.
It's not a long one.
Yeah, if you're not obliged to actually like experience it and you're just trying to like run through it, there's guides you can do it in like an hour and a half or whatever. But I would say if you're gonna spend the money on it, at least try to experience the narrative for what they're putting out there and take the time to be a little introspective on it.
Yeah. Well, then for $20, what do you think?
I give it a solid try. Like I said, this isn't something that's going to be for everybody. I don't imagine like the hardcore Call of Duty crowd are not breaking their necks to play an introspective romance game. And that's fine. But for what it is, it's really well done. Plays well. I did have some quirky camera angle issues that it's a 3D platformer. What do you expect?
Yeah.
You know, quirky cameras and 3D platformers, they go together like love and marriage. Somebody's getting fucked. It's the camera guy.
Nice. Adorable. On that note, next game to talk about is called Bear With Me, The Lost Robots, developed by Exordium Games, published by Modus Games, released July 31st on Xbox One, Switch, PC, and PS4 for $4.99. The complete collection with all four episodes is available for $14.99, featuring an evocative soundtrack, expansive narrative, and a uniquely drawn 2D animated art style accented by an impressive film style noir. Bear With Me will take players through an emotional roller coaster of a journey that will determine the fates of our protagonists. This is the prequel to the previous three games that we covered on the show. And Cole, you're taking a look at this one. How is it?
I am. This was deceptive because it has that film noir look, but you're playing as a little girl named Amber in the game. And then for the sake of the prequel, you're actually playing as her brother Flint. And Their sidekick is a detective teddy bear who's literally named Ted E. Bear. But it's not all Lollipop Guild around here. Like, Teddy Bear literally alludes to the fact that he retired from being a detective because he was tired of pulling bloated, dead, stuffed plushies out of the river. He's got an affliction for carrot juice ale.
Beautiful.
And you know, he curses like fucking me.
So this isn't for the kids?
This is not for the kids. I will say it's a great point and click game. Great puzzles. Literally everything that you run into can be interacted with in some way or another. There's all kinds of great little quips and funny references. I loved picking at the, there's a gecko named OCD, and you literally just click on his board and tell him that he's got a typo to distract him. And he'll just say, I have to do it all over again. And then gets distracted. And it's funny. The humor reminded me a lot of Thimbleweed Park. If you played that one, that was another point and click detective mystery type of game. Minus the black and white and red noir look. But with a lot of the same humor and like basic gameplay mechanics. But it was really funny to play. Really surprisingly dark at times. So you just gotta be prepared for that dark humor to creep its way in. I thought I heard the beep. I'm sorry.
No, I thought you had more to that.
Did it cut down again?
No, I thought you had more to that. So is this a prequel that has you interested in playing the full series now?
Yes. Absolutely. I'm curious, like, I have some ideas about what happens because I was doing my research, but like, I want to know how the prequel ties into the other bits of the rest of the story. I'm trying also not to give any spoilers like I accidentally ran into in my research, but there's some aspects of it that I'm just like, where the fuck is that going to fit in at? And I actually did see some other people complaining, like the game in general just sometimes throws shit out there and then never follows through on it. Hmm. So then I'm like, I need to play to know if that's actually a thing. Is that character just gone, or were they never really there? Some of the characters, the character creation in this, the whole game takes place in these kids' like imagination and the city that they have built up around it. And so there's so much for potential for weird when a game is taking place inside of a kid's mind. And so you never really know what is going to come of any of the characters you run into or any of the places you go, and where, you know, it's a prequel. So you're like, I need to play the rest to know.
Well, the good news is if you enjoy the first game, you can upgrade to the full collection for an extra $9.99. But the Lost Robots being $5, what do you think of it?
Absolutely buy it. This was definitely a lot of fun, but again, it's one of those, you've got to have a penchant for the point and clicks in the first place. But if you enjoyed Thimbleweed Park, if you enjoy anything like Irony Curtain and what was the other one that we played not too long ago? Play so many of these point and clicks now. Holy fuck. There was another one that had a similar sense of like dark goofball comedy that was a point and click. But if that's your kind of thing, then you don't want to miss out on this. It seems deceptive because you think, okay, it's about kids and a teddy bear. But the first time the teddy bear drops a goddamn, you're just like, nope, I was wrong. We're good.
Nice.
That motherfucker's got a smoker's voice. Like he's like Vin Diesel was chain smoking for 10 years.
Oh Jesus.
It's incredible.
All right. So you enjoyed it for $5.
Fuck, seriously, that's the voice. Yes. And I did enjoy it for $5.
Are you gonna buy the rest of it?
Yes.
Nice. All right, next game to talk about is called The Expression Amarillado, developed by Sucara Sparrow, published by Manga Gamer, released June 21st on Steam for $24.99. This is the story, pure and sometimes frustrating, of two girls intertwined through their fumbling efforts to communicate. Learn a new language by playing the game. Dark Mika covered this one because it involves lesbians, because why not? And this is what she has to say. The expression. What?
Joe, are you typecasting the reviewers?
She requested it specifically because there were lesbians.
Shame on you.
That's not typecasting at all. That was her decision. The expression Amarillado is a visual novel that seems to be an adventure novel, but really isn't. All the choices seem to lead to the same conclusions, just in slightly different ways, so there might as well be no choices. The story focuses on Rin and her relationship with Ruka and Rei, because why not have them all with our names just to fuck with you? Rin heads out one day to go get some food, and after biting into it, she trips over herself but catches herself from the fall. When she looks up, everything feels off. Takes her some time to realize that the sky is pink and all the signs aren't in Japanese anymore. They're in some other language she can't understand. No one can understand her, and she can't understand anyone else. While sitting in an alley trying not to cry, Ruka shows up and reaches out to her, not that either of them understand each other. This is where their journey to understand each other starts, as well as Rin's journey to understand this new world and her place in it. The language used in the world is called Huliamo. In real life, they just took the language Esperanto because most people don't know it or even that it exists. The game goes about teaching you, the player, the language, going so as far as to give you study sheets and quizzes. In-game, Rin is doing it, but since you have to choose the answers, you are too. It's a cool mechanic that I feel like engaged me more in the game. However, it also meant I needed more breaks from the game because, quite frankly, it's hard to shove that much information into your head all at the same time. The game took me 13 hours to beat, but I had to spread it over 4 or 5 days. I did actually learn fragments of the language, but it's not sticking with me simply because I'm not talking or writing with it on a regular basis, but the fact remains I did learn it. Matter of fact, it even helped me understand old stuff I never quite understood about English grammar and types of words because it taught their own grammar in such in a fairly simple and easy way. As a language learning tool, I really like this game. As a story, it's really cute and gets some good dramas in it as well. I do, however, have two issues with the game. Number one, choices don't matter, and that drives me mad. There's no reason for the choices if they don't really change anything. Example of that is in one area, Ruka is maybe being picked on. You can choose to wait to see what happens just in case you're not understanding the situation right, or charge in. Both choices end with you kicking a rock, which alerts the people to your presence, and they leave. Every choice you make in the game is like that. It changes some mild flavor text, then everything goes back to the same path. I want choices to matter in games because that's the only purpose to having choices. Number two, the ending. You get a lot of drama suddenly at the very end, and then it skips and the drama is resolved. There's no build-up to fix the drama, no solution that you see. You're just told it was solved, though to its credit, it's obvious how it was solved. However, it feels really unsatisfying because you get this delicious drama and sadness build-up, and poof, next scene is a time skip into the future, and it was all dealt with, and it's like, what the fuck, dude? Other than that, the game is great, the voice acting is great, the music is great, the character models are cute as a button, and the learning and tests you take in the game are pretty fantastic. For $25, I think it's worth it. If you want to, anyways, it can and will teach you a new language. It won't do it perfectly, but it's a pretty strong step into learning it since it teaches the basics and plenty of extra info as well. On top of that, it's a cute little lesbian story. It only took me 13 hours to beat it, but I'm also really good at picking up languages, and I know enough fragments to form various ones that grasping this one wasn't difficult for me. However, even if you're not good at it, it has various study modes to help you learn and continue to understand the language. That sounds really cool.
That actually does.
A visual novel that teaches you a language.
Think of how neat it would be to use something like that to like languages that are endangered and only have 5 or 6 people left that speak them.
Yeah.
That would be cool to just use that to like, what's the chronicle, the languages. I couldn't get the word out. Couldn't do it, but I did it and I'm okay now.
I like Doc Havoc. To be honest, I thought it could use a little more lesbian. Anyway, next game to talk about is called Superstar Blast, developed and published by Entwickler X, released August 2nd on Xbox One for $6.99. Superstar Blast is a space-based game with challenging levels of increasing difficulty. All enemies must be shot down to finish a level and go to the next one. A scanner around the player tells roughly where the enemies are located. Cole, tell us about Superstar Blast.
I mean, they kind of covered it all right there.
Yeah, they did.
It's not an overwhelmingly complicated game. And that's what's good about it. It's just a classic, you know, old school looking, not old school looking. It's got the newer 3D graphics, but the old school kind of space arcade shooter vibe going with it, but modernized, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it's got an asteroids vibe to it.
Yeah. There used to be a 3D-ish version of Asteroids that played just like this, where like literally the asteroids and the space alien ships fly around you and you just have to kind of turn left or right or go forward or back a little bit. You don't have a whole lot. It's kind of like implied movement. You feel like you're going several hundred light years, but you're really just still stuck in the middle of the screen. But the radar around you will kind of give you an indication, like there will be 2 or 3 green dots in an area if there are enemies in that direction or another. That has its perks, but it also has its downsides. One of the biggest issues that I had with the game is that you have to defeat every enemy on a level in order to go to the next.
Yeah.
There are some enemy types, however, that if you're moving and you get close to them, they just veer away from you. And at times, they would already, your radar would indicate which direction they were. But if you went that direction, you wouldn't ever see them because they would be off screen just enough that as soon as you started moving toward them, they would continue further off screen. And so you would just spend 10 minutes sometimes
chasing one enemy.
And it's like, fuck you, sit down. I don't understand. That was my number one complaint because I was ready to pull my hair out. Otherwise, I would be having so much fun, and then I would get down to one enemy, and I'd be like, I know it's one of those motherfuckers.
One of those red sons of bitches.
And then it is the red sons of bitches. And then you can't find them, and they're just gone, and you're zooming around in circles for 20 minutes. I had one other gripe about the game.
What is it?
As simple as it fucking all is. And that's the upgrade menu. There's no explanation for the upgrades at all. You do earn a score, but it's never shown to you on your HUD. You have no idea how you can earn bonuses, but it never tells you how. You just go to the upgrade screen after you beat a level, and it's like, ta-da! Look at all this shit you can't afford.
Yeah.
Because you could play like 5 levels and never have enough to afford a basic fucking upgrade. And
especially if you die and you end up spending your score on extra ships.
Yeah. And then to add insult to injury, like, it's really forgiving when you die. You just start back on the same level, but you lose any bonus that you had accrued prior to that death. So then if you hadn't already spent that on an upgrade, which, spoiler alert, you probably didn't because you probably couldn't afford the upgrade anyway, even with the bonus, then it was just absolutely gone. So you never knew how much you had, you never knew how much you were earning, and you never had enough.
Yeah.
And it was infuriating. I kept thinking I had done something wrong. I never quite figured out how to get any decent upgrades, and I made it to level 20.
Damn.
Like, I'm sitting here going, I just can't afford shit. I cannot. I had a couple of spare ships, and that was about it. It's just, why?
The worst is if you lose all your lives and you continue over, you only have the one life.
Yeah.
And you have to either complete the stage with one life or keep repeating that one stage until you do beat it.
And then once you beat it, you're still not going to have enough for another upgrade. So you better hope you beat the next one on one life too.
Yeah. I think the game is just a bit too difficult. I wish there was a way to go back and like farm a level over and over.
Yeah.
So I could actually afford any upgrade in the game.
Yeah, there is no going back whatsoever. Once you beat levels, that's just where you are.
Yeah, if there was a level select to be able to replay levels and build up your score and be able to actually afford things, I think this game would be a home run.
I think it would be nice too if they at least like gave you some kind of indicator, like, oh, if you kill X amount in a certain amount of time, you're getting a multiplier. Like, there's no explanation for comboing or how to better your score. It's just go shoot them and hope for the best.
No.
And any combo that you would have racked up is long gone by the time you get to that one motherfucker hiding off screen.
That red son of a bitch.
Just, it's hopeless. So yeah, the difficulty as far as that goes is just a little unnecessary.
Yeah.
I'm glad you say the same, because I thought, boy, I'm just going to be on here bitching it's hard, and everybody's going to be like, well, she's bad at it. Of course she thinks it's hard.
No, it's just game.
I was doing good, but I just wasn't. It wasn't rewarding in any kind of way to do good.
No.
Because even though you were progressing, you weren't benefiting from the progression. So,
yeah.
Beyond that,
overall, I had $7.
Yeah, at $7, I still give it a try. It. I had fun with it when I wasn't wanting to bash my head into the wall. It was just hard.
Yeah, I agree. I think $7 isn't a bad price for the game. I think all of the issues that we have, except for the red sons of bitches that keep flying away from you, can be solved by adding a level select and being able to replay levels.
Yep.
I think that would fix pretty much any kind of major gripes that we have. It would make the game a lot more accessible, a lot easier to get through, a lot easier to actually afford any kind of upgrade. I don't understand how you're supposed to be able to afford stuff in this game, especially if you keep dying and you have to keep buying more ships.
The first upgrade for a shield costs 40,000 points, and it literally took me until I was like a level 11 to have that much.
The shield was 25.
No, I'm pretty sure it's, is it?
I think the shield was 25.
Is it the power that's 40,000?
Yeah, the shooting upgrade was 40.
Yeah.
And I never got there.
I never actually got to it because I didn't realize about until it was too late about spending on the ships.
Yeah, I've restarted like my progress so many times trying to just get better scores, and it just, I want to replay stages. Just let me do that.
Mm-hmm.
All right, final game to talk about tonight is some DLC for Darksiders 3 called Keepers of the Void, developed by Gunfire Games, published by THQ Nordic. It released July 16th for Darksiders 3 for $12.99. On a quest from Volgrim, Fury must travel into Serpent Holes to remove an ancient threat that resides there. Serpent Holes are riddled with new puzzles and enemies eager to test Fury's abilities. If Fury prevails, she will unlock an all-new weapon from the Hollows, as well as the biggest prize of them all, the Abyssal Armor. Cole, tell us about Keepers of the Void.
Oh boy. So as you said, the story focuses on the demon Volgrim, who runs the serpent holes that basically you use them for fast travel in Darksiders, if you're not familiar with that. He sends Fury to go clear them out of these elemental demons. So you have these void dungeons. There are four different ones, each focused on an element, obviously, and each with their own boss and a whole series of puzzles in order to get to that boss. The DLC focuses far more on that puzzle element than the base game does. The base game has, like, those quirky puzzle moments that aren't necessarily Darksiders' strong suit, if I'm perfectly honest. Like, they're a little on the frustrating side. If I'm playing Darksiders, I just want to spine whip people into oblivion and maybe burn some shit down. I just want to hack and slash. I will say, though, they did add, I don't know if it was part of the DLC update or if it was in a previous update from when I last played it, they did add some quality of life improvements as far as, like, how the hack and slash goes, and you can choose the original Darksiders 3 combat mechanics, which I fucking hated, or you can switch over to the classic hack and slash, and that was a good choice. I'm not sure what update brought that on, but thank fucking goodness. That said, it doesn't fucking matter in the DLC, because the DLC does put so much more emphasis on the puzzles, and it's a little disappointing. They become repetitive very quick. There's only a couple of possibilities as far as, I'm trying not to spoil anything either. There's only a couple of possibilities for, like, how the puzzles can play out.
Yeah.
And so once you get, like, the basic mechanic, every dungeon feels like you're doing the same set of puzzles to get through a boss that is just a reskinned version of the last boss.
No.
Because they're all just elemental-based bosses, and they're not, they don't have that same kind of character and charisma that the seven deadly sins have from the base game. So it's just like, it feels kind of like busy work just to get to the final boss of the DLC. And just like how the puzzles are repetitive, the bosses, they're just reskinned. They might have one or two minor differences in how they attack, but it's just go in, get your ass beat, kick a little bit of ass back, carry on to the next one. It gets repetitive really quickly, unfortunately.
That's a bummer.
The biggest issue, beyond just getting boring kind of quickly, is for hardcore Darksiders fans. The Abyssal Armor that you mentioned, that is kind of like, that is the creme de la creme of Darksiders armor. And in the previous games, it was the top tier. You just got it. You beat the game, you got the armor. This time with Darksiders 3, the only way to get the Abyssal armor is with this DLC.
That's a bummer, too.
So, something that is kind of important to the series is locked behind DLC and is now a paid edition as opposed to being part of the series. That, again, to use the phrase, add insult to injury, is made a little worse by the fact that the DLC, as fun as it is to just, like, run through these dungeons, even though they get a little monotonous, they don't add anything to the canon or the lore of the story.
No.
So that makes it even worse that something as important as Fury's Abyssal Armor is locked behind just all this weird filler content. So, like, hardcore fans are probably... they're going to want to get the DLC because they're going to want the fucking Abyssal Armor. But it's kind of cruel to milk them for it, too.
Yeah. Well, overall, $13 on the DLC. What's your verdict?
I will say, I mean, if you're a fan, try it. But I would also say you'd be better off to get the season pass because it's only like a couple dollars more than just buying the DLC. I think it's
$14.99 for the season pass or the content pass.
Instead of just buying the DLC by itself, if you were going to bother to buy any DLC for Darksiders, you would be better off buying the season pass rather than just trying to buy anything individually because you'd be out more money.
Yeah.
So I'm a slap a healthy try it on there, but this isn't going to make anybody break the door down to buy Darksiders if they weren't already into it.
Yeah. So. Oh, well.
Yeah.
Good to hear.
The Abyssal Armor looks cool as fuck, though.
Does it?
I had to go look it up. I didn't get it myself yet. But damn it. Oh, it looks
in
cool.
In due time, you will get
it. Yeah. I am not a Darksiders master. Like, I've had a really steep learning curve with the game. So, I've had to
do
my research.
Did you have fun?
I did. It's just, like I said, it just got repetitive. But by the time you're, like, balls deep in the third elemental dungeon, you're just like, I feel like I've done this before. And then you realize you still got one more to go, and you're like, well, fuck.
Yeah. Well, overall, a decent week of games.
Yes.
Good.
Yes.
Do you have a pick of the week?
Is it okay if I say it?
Yes.
The Church in the Darkness is my pick of the week. Absolutely. Nice.
Yeah, that one sounded really cool, so I'm excited to check that one out.
I'm going to spend so much more of my weekend. Just, I hope nobody is expecting anything else out of me for Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, because I'm going to be playing the Church in Darkness and everything else can fuck off.
Well, maybe some Blackout Club, which we planned on redoing the Blackout Club this week, but an update dropped. Literally, Dark Mika told me about the update like an hour before showtime.
Yeah.
So we bumped it to next week. If you are interested in hearing our thoughts on the Blackout Club, tune in on 504 and we will have that for you.
Yeah. I'll be carving out just a little bit of weekend time so we can finish those achievements.
Nice. But that is it for this episode. Another successful one in the books.
Woo!
A lot of subs today. That was awesome getting three subs.
Everybody subs when we're streaming because they like my funky voice and they don't care that I say fuck.
Yeah.
That's my story. That's what I'm telling myself and everybody else can just get over it.
My hopes are that we get to the 15 sub marker, which is when we get another emote and then we could put the wet pancakes emote on Twitch.
And then the subs could actually use the wet pancakes everywhere.
Everywhere.
Yes.
Wet pancakes. Norg, do you have any final words to end the show?
Wet pancakes!